Red Bull Music returns with US spiritual jazz guru Lonnie Liston-Smith. In his first ever Australian visit, Lonnie takes over Sydney's overseas passenger terminal's cargo hall on Thursday, August 23rd. Leading the supports will be Fosh, Midnight Swim and Mike Hu for a night of enlightening, cosmic and modern jazz. Tickets are selling fast. Head to redbullmusic.com to purchase. Red Bull Music sponsors 2SER 107.3.
To Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3, Sydney's local and independent current affairs. I'm Nadine Silva. Today on the show,
the policing has been designed around the neoliberal business model.
The most recent annual police report reveals an increase in police misconduct across the state. Over the weekend, two officers were charged with misconduct. One incident involved drug possession and the other involving domestic violence. Also coming up on Razor's Edge.
Speaking on behalf of the City of Sydney, it's not something that we have ever supported. It's not something that the state government have ever really given us a choice over.
The ongoing contentious infrastructure project, WestConnex, have just renamed on an agreement to design and construct wetlands in accordance with the Camdenville Park Master Plan. The toll road has increased tensions between local and state governments as the construction continues. All that and more coming up on Razor's Edge. A year since the landmark report from the Human Rights Commission highlighting the extent of sexual assault on campus, Redfern Legal Centre has released resources to support international students who have experienced sexual assault. Michelle Elias has the report.
A new multi-language resource has been released to support international students who are victims of sexual assault. The initiative, titled Your Body, Your Choice, was developed for international students who do not know where to seek help after an assault, as well as those who are too afraid to speak out. Sean Stimson, an international student solicitor who helped develop the initiative at Redfern Legal Centre, explains that international students often experience unique vulnerabilities and barriers.
There were some specific issues affecting international students, and over the last 7.5 years, we've identified some horrid trends that are affecting the international student community.
The centre found that international students who were victims of sexual assault often did not know their rights and sometimes stayed quiet from a fear of having their visas retracted. Your Body, Your Choice steps students through the law in relation to sexual assault and provides contacts for free counselling, legal support and medical services.
This came through from the clients that we'd spoken to. They said they didn't know where to go or who to contact. And there was a huge amount of pushback from wanting to speak to the police. They have concerns over their visas, that if they were to speak to the police, would it in some way affect their visa status? That, for us, was a huge concern, that if you have a victim of a sexual assault who has not come forward because they are on a student visa, it sounded alarm bells to us. So for us, we wanted to get that messaging out there as quickly as we can, that it does not affect your visa status.
Belle Lim, a women's officer at the Council of International Students in Australia, says the challenges do not end there.
Firstly, a lot of the international students, especially from Asian region, they come from a conservative cultural background where sexual violence is not commonly acceptable. And where the victim-blaming culture is more apparent. Secondly, there might be some language barrier. Thirdly, international students might not be aware of the support available and their rights.
The information tailored to assist international students has been translated into 11 different languages and was developed in consultation with a number of organisations, including Rape Crisis New South Wales and the New South Wales Police. Sean Stimson from Redfern Student Legal Centre says the resources are the first of its kind.
We looked to see what resources were available to the international student community, and whilst there was information out there, the information was not specific to the needs of international students, and quite often it wasn't delivered in community languages.
Stimson says the hurdles faced by international students meant that cases often went unreported, but it's time the trend changes.
The clients that we are seeing, we know, is only the tip of the iceberg. For us, the resource is to generate more people coming forward if they have the need to come forward. We want to be able to provide that support, you know, whether or not that be legal, whether or not it just be a referral base.
Available in hard copies and online, Your Body, Your Choice will be circulated among universities, education providers and support organisations.
Michelle Elias, ending that report. You are listening to Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3. I'm Nadine Silva. Today is the International Day of Indigenous Peoples, and the Coalition of Aboriginal Peak Organisations marked the day with a march on Parliament. The march concluded with CAPO members entering Parliament to make their demands to government. Caitlin McHugh spoke to those attending.
Aboriginal groups marched on Parliament House in Sydney today in a rally time to coincide with the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples and to demand government action on a range of issues affecting Aboriginal people. Luke Carroll, who emceed the event, explains.
It's about getting the peak organisations, the Aboriginal organisations here in New South Wales, to go into Parliament, have a voice about keeping up the support of our organisations. We need more support. There's not enough that's been done in this state. So we have the Coalition of Aboriginal Peak Organisations, also known as CAPO, delegates from that have gone in to see the politicians, have a meeting with them, and hopefully some positive outcomes will happen from that.
CAPO covers a range of organisations and various campaigns. People attending had diverse reasons for marching.
There needs to be more funding put into the community. We also need to make sure that funding goes to where the most relevant causes are, and the usual ones is employment, housing and the incarceration rate of Aboriginal persons, especially our youth. And so we need to have more hands-on programs, and we need to have continuity rather than just having band-aid solutions and so forth.
That's Avery Brown, a Bundjalung man. Diane Randall, a Yagal and Bundjalung woman, called for recognition of Aboriginal people.
I want this to come out of today, is that we to be recognised as the First Nations people, first people on this land.
Cindy Roberts, a Widjibal Bundjalung woman, says greater self-determination for Aboriginal people is essential.
Well, the government needs to take their hands off our land. They need to take their hands off our assets. They need to take their hands, and give the rights back to our people that we can, that we can become self-sufficient, self-determined, that we can, that we can run our own countries, we can run our own lands.
Bunja Smith, chair of the Aboriginal Legal Service and speaker at the rally, echoed these sentiments in his speech.
We call on the decision makers here in Macquarie Street, the mob behind me, to listen to Aboriginal people on how we can address our current and future issues. We may have had an apology, but the reality is Aboriginal people are still being left out of crucial decision making.
Avery Brown has been campaigning since the 70s and hopes this march will see an effective government response.
Well, I've been campaigning for rights for Aboriginal people most of my life, and having worked with the Aboriginal Legal Service for almost 30 years and it's retired about a year and a half ago, I'm still involved in community, and I do a lot of voluntary work, and a lot of that includes social justice. And, of course, equality and rights for Aboriginal people, because it just seems to me that if there's any progress being made, it's been very slow, and we need to let the government know that they need to lift their act and be a bit more fair dinkum when they talk about justice for Aboriginal people.
That was Avery Brown ending that report by Caitlin McHugh.
Iceland's BAFTA-winning pianist and composer, Ólafur Arnalds, returns to Sydney Opera House this November, performing old and new material with a uniquely wired string quartet, percussion, plus a playground of pianos and synthesizers. Don't miss the neoclassical wonder leading a gentle revolution. Book now for Oliver Arnold's November 28 at sydneyoperahouse.com. Sponsors of 2SER.
I'm Nadine Silva, and you're listening to Razor's Edge, coming to you live from this place known as Sydney, on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation. Last Saturday, two police officers from the Northwest Metropolitan Region were charged for police misconduct in two separate incidents, one for drug possession and the other for domestic violence. According to last year's annual New South Wales Police Report, there's been a 43% increase in misconduct raised in complaints against police since 2016. Greens MP David Shoebridge was quick to clarify that the New South Wales police force isn't riddled with corruption. However, the Law Enforcement Conduct Commission, the agency that's meant to investigate police misconduct, hasn't been able to look into dozens of cases because they haven't had the resources or investigators to do so.
You know, I think if the people of New South Wales knew that there were dozens and dozens of integrity issues relating to the police that have just been not dealt with because of an inadequate amount of resources in the oversight body, I think people would rightly be concerned about that. I'm concerned about it. And the answer is more resources to the LEC.
2 months ago, the New South Wales Police Association accused the government of failing to adequately invest in police resources. While Mr. Shoebridge said that the New South Wales Police had consistent growth in their budget for the past 20 years, he agrees.
So if people are wondering why police say they don't have the resources to respond to domestic violence, why police don't have the resources to actually properly investigate, you know, cold case murders and homicides, it's because there are political decisions chosen to squander police resources left, right and centre.
And what did he mean by this?
It's the fact that they continue to resource, at the cost of millions and millions of dollars, some pretty appallingly useless programs like the New South Wales Drug Dog program, which we know has cost, just running the drug dog unit costs about $10 million a year. And we also continue to see a vast amount of police resources doing small-time drug possessions for personal use and the like. So if you redirected those wasted resources to where there is a crying need, I think largely the resource problem would be fixed within the New South Wales Police Force.
I spoke to Dr. Michael Kennedy, the senior lecturer of the policing program at the University of Western Sydney. He worked as a detective in the New South Wales Police Force for 18 years. And he believes neoliberalism has turned our justice system into a system of money-making.
I think what we're looking at is a business model that I don't believe is fair and reasonable. And to measure their productivity in the same way that Coca-Cola measures the number of bottles of Coca-Cola that they sell is simply absurd.
And therefore, funding has been going into policing programs that yield profit as opposed to more essential services.
The funding for police, it's about how their competency is measured. But this is across the board, not just in Australia, but overseas, that their productivity is measured in terms of their arrest rates. If you want police to be aggressive and to arrest more people and to do almost declared war on the public, then the police are going to be aggressive. They've got to be. And their competency is linked to how assertive they are and how many arrests they make.
So when critiquing the number of cases of police misconduct and police incentives, Dr. Kennedy encourages a holistic evaluation of the entire system.
They criticise zero-tolerance policing, but the problem is when they criticise zero-tolerance policing, they criticise the agency or the individual actions of individual police. They don't challenge those that are shaping our society, shaping the police department, and shaping its values.
While Dr. Kennedy acknowledges that police misconduct is a big issue, he believes the blame should be less focused on the individual and more critical of the system at large.
Every effort is being made to take the spotlight away from those that are shaping the policing system, and it's been put on to the low-level functionaries. It's like blaming nurses because of the mental health system and how it's failed. You just can't do that because there are structural factors that are outside of the control of the functionaries. They're just doing what they're required to do.
That was Dr. Michael Kennedy from the University of Western Sydney ending that report. In this year's federal budget, the National School Chaplaincy Program was extended for another 4 years. The controversial program has sparked a debate over whether taxpayer funds should be invested into secular state schools and its effects on the well-being of Aussie school kids. Ellie Campbell has this story.
Since its introduction in 2007, The National Schools Chaplaincy Program has received almost $1 billion in government funding. This year, the government renewed the program, investing nearly $250 million towards placing chaplains in state schools. Federal President of the Australian Education Union, Karina Haythorpe, says that the money should have been spent on qualified counsellors.
I think it's very important that these funds are spent more broadly. The Turnbull government has cut $1.9 billion of funds out of our schools over the next 2 years alone. And we know that where our schools have been able to invest in employing qualified professional counsellors with a teaching background, they've been able to deal with the issues that our young people face today. We don't believe it's appropriate that school chaplains do this.
Chaplains are currently required to have a Certificate 4 in social work or pastoral care. This has raised concerns over whether chaplains are professionally equipped to counsel students. Former school principal and president of the New South Wales Teachers Federation, Maury Mulheron, says the impact of funding underqualified chaplains could have a dramatic impact on the well-being of students.
What young people need are people with proper counselling qualifications, both teaching and psychology qualifications, trained professional school counsellors who can work with all kids on some of the most complex issues that young people face to do with eating disorders, self-esteem, depression, suicide. There's a whole range of issues where we need professional people coming in, and to think that we're sending in people from local churches with no qualification into the and we're giving them money that should be spent on properly funding qualified counsellors is an absolute disgrace.
Newling Public School chaplain Herbie O'Napa says her work has brought about a positive change to her students. She is a qualified counsellor and has a degree in psychology. However, says her role as a chaplain serves a more spiritual purpose.
I can only speak from my own personal purpose, my own personal mission as chaplain of Newling Public School, and that is just to love every student, to love every individual in this community as Jesus Christ has loved me. You know, I'm inspired by my Christian values. And so as a chaplain here, I offer mentoring, leadership, genuine friendship. You know, my compassion and enthusiasm for the young people here is reflected through the chaplaincy program. And I'm committed to modelling, you know, the integrity through my values and life example. And so my purpose predominantly is to be here and to offer that support, to offer the promotion of well-being through the love of Jesus Christ. And that's my own personal goal.
In 2015, Federal Education Department officials told Senate estimates that over 80% of Australian chaplains were Christian. New South Wales Shadow Minister for Education, Jihad Dib, says a lack of religious diversity could potentially lead to problems for students accessing assistance.
If it's the principle of having a chaplain there to try and support students, to help students, to guide students, then, you know, I would say that's fine. But what I would hate to see is a situation where there are students of particular faiths or no faiths who feel that they can't talk to the chaplain. And then as a result, what we're getting is we're getting a situation where we've got a federally funded member of staff who's only working for a small group of students. And I think that's where the argument for a youth worker or a counsellor comes in, that they would work across the board no matter what.
Despite concerns over qualifications and increased funding, independent studies have shown that Australian students have responded well to the program. Author, former educator and current research fellow at the Australian Catholic University, Dr. Kevin Donnelly, believes that chaplains are a valuable addition to our public schools.
I think that chaplaincy program is a very worthwhile program, very beneficial. With all the increase in, you know, social networking and sexting and bullying, there is a real need for students to get some counselling and also to learn more about what I call a moral compass, having a strong sense of right and wrong, and how they should relate to one another and how they should decide what is good and bad behaviour.
In this year's federal budget, the government extended the chaplaincy program by another 4 years, to the delight of religious organisations and outrage of secular advocates nationwide. As the debate rages on over student wellbeing and the separation of church and state, the National School Chaplaincy Program has been cemented as a divisive force in our public school system.
Ellie Campbell, ending that report.
One of the most unique Australian voices to emerge this century, Courtney Barnett makes her headline concert hall debut at Sydney Opera House this August. I need a little time now. Performing songs from her new album, Tell Me How You Really Feel, join the four-time ARIA winner and full band. Book now for Courtney Barnett, August 23 and 25 at sydneyoperahouse.com. Sponsors of 2SER.
The WestConnex road construction has been causing ongoing controversy in Sydney since 2015. Earlier this year, the final stage of the $17 billion project was approved with a tunnel being built to connect the M4 at Haberfield to the M5 at St Peter's. Allegra Short spoke with the Deputy Mayor of Sydney, Jess Miller, about this project.
As Deputy Mayor of Sydney, what are some of your main concerns when it comes to WestConnex?
Well, I have a very long list, but the main ones, I think, are the effect of an extraordinarily large increase of traffic coming into the city. So on Euston Road and through the St Peter's interchange, I think we're looking at around about 120,000 cars coming up Euston Road during peak hour. Currently, it's jammed with 6,000. I'm really concerned about all of the emissions that those cars will cause and the air that residents in our local area are going to be forced to breathe as a result of that. I'm really worried about the waste of $45 billion of taxpayer money on a private road that they then have to pay again to use. So it's a long list. I can keep going if you like. The unfiltered smokestacks, the dodgy deals, the secrecy. Yeah, there's a long list.
So there was an agreement in place recently between the Inner West Council and WestConnex to see new wetlands, a BMX track and accessible paths built in accordance with the Camdenville Park Master Plan, which has been in the works since 2014. WestConnex has since denied the agreement and have reneged their cooperation with the Master Plan, seeing the wetlands removed from the reconstruction design. Is this the first time WestConnex have pulled out of a council agreement? Do you know about any conflict between councils and WestConnex?
Speaking on behalf of the City of Sydney, you know, it's not something that we have ever supported. It's not something that the state government have ever really given us a choice over. It originally was based off a federal government infrastructure funding decision when Anthony Albanese was the planning minister. But originally the point of WestConnex was to try and decongest the suburbs around the airport by making it easier for freight that's coming into the airport to then be transported by road to the western suburbs. The real problem about WestConnex at the moment is it doesn't even go anywhere near the airport. So we're missing that critical linkage that was happening from the beginning.
Should local councils have greater autonomy when it comes to making decisions regarding issues like WestConnex?
Oh, like in a perfect world, of course. I mean, the fundamentals of democracy is that you represent the best interests of the people, right? So I guess the difference between state and local government is that we're in the community all of the time. And we have an opportunity to, I suppose, reflect the views and the values of our community.
Would you say that WestConnex are prioritising rebuilding the environment that is being uprooted for incoming infrastructure?
Absolutely not, no. And the way that they're doing it is really quite vile, in my opinion. But what we've seen at Sydney Park in particular has been really upsetting, where they've used state significant powers. So it's like the state government has this magic wand sometimes, and they can sort of dub these state significant, which means that local government, which is generally the consent authority for what happens on a piece of land, no longer has any say. So a good example of that is when they, for no reason that I nor anybody else can kind of figure out really, removed hundreds and hundreds of trees along Euston Road. They did it in the height of summer, so for all of the residents living in the apartments on that side of the street, they lost all their shade. It's still a construction site now. It's very unclear what work they were actually doing at the time, and it's also very unclear what the designs were.
So,
So there's shenanigans that definitely go on, and it's there's no genuine consideration for the environment from what I can see.
WestConnex has caused major destruction in parts of the Inner West, such as St Peters and Haberfield. However, transport from Greater Western Sydney into the city is a huge part of the Sydney landscape. What alternatives could or should have been implemented instead of WestConnex?
Oh, that's like public transport, definitely. That's the only other option. And one of the other things that's really concerning is that when you invest in a project like this, basically they're in a process now where they're bidding for who gets to own it and who gets to operate it. It'll probably be Transfer. They already have most of the monopoly on tollways in New South Wales. But to secure that deal, they get to put in things into the contract like a non-compete clause. What do you think is going to compete with a private toll road? Public transport. So everybody's getting doubly screwed because on the one hand, you're forced, and they refer to people that use the toll roads as retail. So you have to have a retail entry point. And so they're kind of building this thing to funnel as many people as possible onto this toll road and at the same time making sure that no alternatives can be built that are cheaper, that are more efficient, more environmentally friendly and more fair, so that they can just make money. Like, we're just being screwed.
Jess Miller, ending that report by Allegra Short. Thanks for listening to Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3. Razor's Edge is produced on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation. If you like the show, we're on next week on Thursday night from 7:30. I'm Nadine Silva. Catch you guys later.
About to go, so proper lyric on the tune. Chill it if you're not with it, no pressure. Send vivid images among men and women with song. I'm sort of like Picasso with the mic. Word form hype, dispense energy like battery flat on your life. Kill it, we loving the vibe. Silly to diss it, this is my life. Fill the mind, defending it to the end of mine. Staying true to it, maneuver through the shit. I do the do to kick the wickedest music into mix. Man, if you moving in this super duper Uber type attack, I left him tripping over drunk. A sober loads of heads are getting to know it's undeniable. Ready rock crowds with the fire, sounds dire. But I'm only up running off them liars. We hire them, man, are stuck in the oven. Early retirement to be. If the people ain't buzzing off what they speak, we
I speak like this uncapped rogue. There's no way to know, so we hold it down, pick up a sound, we're on a show. I speak like this uncapped rogue. There's no way to down, pick up a sound,
put
on a show.
Day tonight, I see fading lights. We still hope for the morning, sure to be bright. I stay positive, keep it in mind.
My head high,
setting off, steady, setting things right. From day to night, I see fading lights. We still hope for the morning, sure to be bright. I stay positive, keep it in mind. My head high, setting off, steady, setting things right.
Thoughts plus telepathy rearrange trajectory, so I can send them somewhere useful where something's achieved. Disbelieve, allergy to mystery. Clean your mind with antihistamines with Listerine. You can breathe fresh and easy. Breathing is believing, and that will maybe get you through. the evening. Eventually you're leaving and bereaving, breathing as you realise mortality's deceiving when seeking purpose. No, not what we're missing. Unraveling the present if we're always reminiscing. Jest only liquids down a size wine thinning. Forget about your thick hips, indulge in fine linen. To line refined women, redefine swimming. Open up a public pool and tackle crime in them. Ever searching for a spark of static electric. Never gonna mess with my aquatic detectives.